Coming up on Tech News Today, what Google will do with Waze, how Sony won E3, and what all that Apple stuff from WWDC means. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 11th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT6. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we try to keep you up to date. The most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Sony bounced back from looming defeat like Rocky in all the Rocky movies last night with the final details on the Sony PS4. Games took center stage. Great indie titles, things like Octodad, right alongside big franchises like Kingdom Hearts and Bungie's Destiny. But the big punch came when Sony announced there will be no restrictions on sale or trade of used games and no requirement to have an internet connection to play games on disc. Sony finished by announcing the new console will ship in time for the holidays for $399 US, 399 euros, and 349 pounds sterling. Then they metaphorically dropped the mic and left the E3 stage.
Apple's WWDC keynote happened yesterday. It was a small affair. I wouldn't blame you if you missed it, but there were quite a few updates. iOS 7 got a big design change, a flattened overall look and feel, new fonts, new colors, a redesigned camera app, plus a simplified control center and better security in the event of a stolen iPhone. The MacBook Air line got better battery life, but no Retina displays. OS 10.9 moved away from cat memes and into surf breaks with OS 10 Mavericks. And we got a sneak peek of the next-gen Mac Pro with a huge cylindrical design update and power to run multiple 4K screens all at once.
Microsoft dished details about the Xbox One at its E3 press conference. The One will cost $499 and be released to 21 markets in November. Microsoft also demoed some exclusive titles like Forza Motorsport 5 and Rise Son of Rome. Xbox Live membership will now come with 2 free game downloads per month. Microsoft also debuted a redesigned Xbox 360 that takes its design cues from the Xbox One that was available starting yesterday.
Now, people who saw Nintendo's not at E3, Nintendo did too have a big E3 announcement, kind of pre-recorded, partially from an empty conference room in Tokyo, but still innovative new game releases, okay? Things like Super Mario 3D World coming this December. That's right, 3D. And Mario Kart 8, first time with an 8, sometime next spring. Ooh, but in October, we get Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, right? It's the GameCube Zelda, but in HD. And a new game franchise, Donkey Kong. Okay, he's not that new. But Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze is new. It's also in HD, coming sometime this year. So, yeah, Nintendo.
Okay, finally, Google is actually buying Waze to the tune of around $1 billion, plus it sounds like some employee compensation payouts. Google's purchase comes after rumors of failed negotiations between the Israel-based social mapping company and both Facebook and Apple in the past. Although Google says that Waze will continue to operate independently in Israel, the U.S. is currently Waze's largest single market. In a blog post confirming the deal, Waze CEO Noam Barden had this to say about the sale. Quote, choosing the path of an IPO often shifts attention to bankers, lawyers, and the happiness of Wall Street, and we decided we'd rather spend our time with you, the Waze community.
How social. AMD introduced the world to its new FX9590 CPU with a clock speed of 5 gigahertz in turbo mode. The processor uses 8 pile driver cores. Now, 5 gigahertz is too much speed for you. AMD also introduced the 4.7 gigahertz FX9370, which also uses 8 pile driver cores. AMD said these processors will be available during the vague time period of this summer.
86 organizations, including Mozilla, Reddit, 4chan, and the EFF, sent a letter to the U.S. Congress today asking the government to immediately halt the PRISM project and other forms of internet surveillance. They also launched a website called stopwatching.us. Too bad for them. Most citizens in the United States seem to like being spied on. A study from the Pew Research Center found 56% surveyed think the NSA's blanket compilation of telephone metadata is an acceptable way to investigate threats, and only 41% find it unacceptable. 62% told Pew that terrorist threats outweighed privacy concerns, but they do have limits. 52% said the government should not be allowed to monitor email.
Consoles, they're just a passing fad. At least that's what LG thinks. LG thinks the future of gaming is in our TVs, the future of them anyway, and has unveiled the free beta for Ubisoft's Game Now service to smart TVs in the U.S. It's a cloud gaming portal that streams console-grade titles, Devil May Cry 4, Dead Rising 2 being a couple examples, plus free trials and support for other gamepads. LG and Ubisoft say an official launch is sometime in the near future.
HBO must be feeling complimented again. Torrent Freak reports the finality of the TV show Game of Thrones was shared and downloaded a million times in 24 hours with a peak of 170,000 simultaneous peers. That's a lot of peers. That beats the previous record of 160,000. Most downloads came from Australia, followed by the U.S., then Canada, and then the U.K.
Here's an update on the rumored HTC One Mini. Bloomberg reports that according to two people familiar with the matter, a smaller version of the One will launch by August. The One Mini would have a pint-sized 4.3-inch screen, a slower processor, and a lower resolution screen compared to the One. But since the design is based on the One, it'll be really pretty. HTC wants you to buy the pretty Mini when it comes out, if it comes out.
Buy the pretty Mini. Buy it. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a professional website, a blog, a portfolio, an online store. You know, they upgraded their platform last fall, and they just have not stopped since, rolling out all kinds of new product features, integrations, and templates to make sure you get the most from their recent innovations. Squarespace has a 24/7 support team providing live chat during the week and extremely fast email support throughout the day and night. Plus, with plans starting as low as $8 a month for software and hosting, Squarespace is an incredible value. It's exceptionally well-designed. You get award-winning design templates. They just added a new calendar feature called the Events Collection, so you can schedule updates, store sales events, band tour dates, stuff like that. They released a beautiful new template called Momentum with cinematic full-bleed image display. This is gorgeous stuff. This is the kind of stuff you'd pay a designer a lot of money. You get to just take it, drag and drop, use the layout engine, customize it in seconds, add blocks of content, and it's yours. Squarespace Commerce provides powerful and flexible e-commerce solutions as well. That means that all of their store stuff is integrated with all of the beautiful templates. That also means that your site automatically restructures to look great on any device. Somebody's got a little 4-inch screen, looks amazing. On a big 30-inch monitor, still looks amazing. And, of course, they contact all your social media accounts, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, LinkedIn, and more. Squarespace integrates all your website needs into one platform. Domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. So if you haven't gone and tried them out, you got to just do it. It's fun. Take advantage of the free trial. You know, you sign up for a free account, you give them an email address. It's not much. You can give them any email address. You don't need to give them a credit card or anything. Try it out. Start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT6. And get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about free domain registrations, by the way. If you sign up for the annual plan, get a free domain name. And that domain name is yours at squarespace.com. Use the offer code TNT6. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank you them for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, very happy to have Jolie Odell, reporter from VentureBeat and author of Blogging for Photographers, on the show. Welcome, Jolie.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you along. We have lots of news to talk about today. We're going to break it down into two parts. We'll cover what happened at WWDC, kind of kick those ideas around. Then we'll talk a little bit about E3 and Google Waze, maybe get into the NSA PRISM stuff before we get to the end of the show. But Sarah, let's start. WWDC, where do we dig in there?
Okay, let's start with software and then we'll go into hardware, okay? I mean, there's so much to talk about. Of course, we did TNT yesterday before the show, so we really didn't have a chance to talk about any of this stuff on yesterday's show. Let's start with OS X Mavericks. So this is a departure, at least in naming, from the big cat theme that we've all grown so accustomed to. Apple had a fun little, like, maybe we'll call it Sea Lion. Get it? No, we're actually going to call it Mavericks after a surf break in Northern California that most of the world has never heard of. But on the software side, you've got increased battery life, memory performance, better managing of the CPU usage with apps basically taking naps when they're not being used. You've got programs that can go full screen across more than one screen, including a television, if you utilize your Apple TV. So that's kind of cool. OS X will use iCloud to store your passwords across your iOS devices. That includes credit card information. So a little bit of a one password type of situation, which is nice. You've got a map app that can send directions to an iPhone from your Mac. You've got an iBooks app now on the Mac. Sort of curiously wasn't there before. And then it's somewhat unclear who can upgrade, but it seems like the developer preview is working for any Mac that's currently running Mountain Lion. You've got some pretty basic system requirements. So it does seem, as long as you got 8 gigabytes of free disk space, that you can go ahead and upgrade to Mavericks when it is available. Then there's iOS 7, and that's arguably, you know, that was the big thing of this announcement this year. Lots of rumors that iOS 7 would be flattened, would look completely different, and it did not disappoint. It really looks different. You've got a largely flattened version of icons, big design changes in the camera app. You've got Control Center, was never there before, which lets you do a lot of stuff that Android users have enjoyed for some time now, like toggling on and off your wireless connection, adjusting brightness. You've got a flashlight at the ready, music controls, do not disturb. More of a true multitasking experience for all apps. App switching has sort of cards and screens instead of just the icons. Safari has new icons. Bing search was a big part of this. Got kind of a laugh from the crowd. You've got AirDrop that'll let you send images or perhaps even video to people that are close to you geographically. So if you imagine we're all at a group picnic, everybody's taking pictures. It's kind of a nice way to share. Again, the camera app is pretty much completely new and different. They've got kind of cool stuff like filters on the fly, a square photo mode for all those Instagrammers, and so on. Siri has new voices, male and female, and they sound a lot more like actual people, less like that Siri voice that we all grew to know and love. And then activation lock, which I actually thought was one of the best features. iPhones are notoriously the sort of thing that thieves want to take from you. If somebody steals your iPhone and chooses to disable Find My iPhone, they actually won't be able to reactivate the phone. They have to know your Apple ID and your password, which, I mean, unless they know you or are really, really good thieves, they probably won't. So it should be a theft deterrent, at least, you know, for some people. Before we get into, you know, some of the hardware, what does everybody feel about yesterday's announcements? I mean, iOS 7, I think across the board, everyone was a little shocked. You've got people saying, I hate it. It's awful. The color palette is bad. It doesn't seem harmonious. And then other people saying, it's beautiful. Jolie, what do you think?
I think that it is lovely. And I've been waiting a while to see what Apple was going to do. Given that a few OSs have come and gone since they started out with the original iOS, I think what they showed was interesting and really cool and very pretty with all the transparency and the wallpaper's ability to move with you as you move in relation to your phone. I think that's very special and very delightful for end users. It's not really a flat UI. In fact, it feels more dimensional to me because of all the transparency and the layers that they added. I love the new typography, but I have to say, I am disappointed in one thing, and that's those dang app icons. You know, you have this little rounded corner square cluttering up your screen all over the place, and I thought they were going to do something a little more fun, a little more fresh, kind of like the Windows Live tiles, or maybe even something like Facebook Home. I don't know. I was looking for more of a departure from Apple's very old design language when it comes to mobile.
I thought they were going to do something to those icons, too. I thought they were going to, like, square the corners. I guess that would make it look too much like live tiles. But I had the same reaction. They gave, what did they do, Sarah? They gave you the ability to put more things in a folder and page through in the folder. That was about the only organizational change there was.
Yeah, I mean, really, besides Control Center, nothing is really that different in iOS 7. I mean, yes, the multitasking, being able to switch between apps, you get more visual information, but it doesn't really work any differently. You've got some extra features in Safari, but in general, it's really a cosmetic change. More than a functional change. Yes, in folders, if I've got a game folder, I now have various pages within my game folder. So you're not restricted to, what is it, 9 apps or 12 or whatever it is, at least on the iPhone rather than the iPad. It looks very different. And I feel like you're never going to make everybody happy when you make something look very, very different that people have been looking at for years. As iOS, even though it got better, really didn't look any different for a number of years. What is your takeaway from yesterday's announcement?
I think the big thing is that refresh is noticeable. That color palette is going to pop. People are going to see that. And when that's on the next iPhone or your old iPhone, people will realize, oh, something's new about it. A lot of these operating systems are starting to look really similar. There's a lot of white on this. And this just screams Johnny Ive. We knew that he was going to be flattening out the design. And he always talks about with hardware about things getting out of the way. And you seem to see that everywhere here. It does have a bit of consistency, although I've seen some bits of inconsistency in the UI. I'm sure it'll get better over time. I think it's going to turn heads. People will realize that's iOS. It's not some version of Android. Although the fonts and the style of the topography looks like Android. It looks like Windows. So they have a little bit of a problem there.
We also heard about iTunes Radio, which was the long-rumored Pandora killer, certainly Pandora competitor. And indeed, it was launched yesterday. iRadio was what everybody was calling it. It's iTunes Radio, which is really a combination of what people know and in many cases love from Pandora, plus your library. So you have the opportunity to have a station based on an artist or a genre, but you can also incorporate songs from your library to easily buy these songs that iTunes Radio may offer up to you. Now, it's free, but it will be ad-supported. But if you pay for iTunes Match, which is $25 per year, you'll get a no-ad version. So for those of us who do pay for iTunes Match, it's a nice little added benefit. But there was also hardware announcements. We got a MacBook Air line refresh, not a MacBook Pro line refresh. In fact, MacBook Pros were never even mentioned, which I thought was a little bit curious. But the Airs now have Intel's Haswell chips. They don't have Retina displays, and we had speculated that maybe that's what the Haswell chips would be there to do, is give the same amount of battery life but be able to power a Retina display. Well, we don't have Retina, but we have better battery life. So some people will be pretty excited about that. 11-inch Air has now been improved to 9 hours from 5 hours of battery time. The 13-inch is improved all the way up to 12 hours. That's up from 7. So very impressive as far as that goes. New Wi-Fi standard, the AC standard, 802.11.ac. Their new wireless routers, Apple's new wireless routers, will support the same standard. And those two 11-inch and 13-inch MacBook Air lines start at $1,000 and $1,100 respectively. So they start a little bit lower than the previously Airs started, although the most souped-up versions are the same price that they were in the Apple Store beforehand. And then we got a sneak peek at a brand new cylindrical black Mac Pro. Looks completely different than the Mac Pro that, wow, wasn't really even changed for, 6 years or so. It will be assembled in the U.S., so says Apple, and is very impressive. I mean, this thing is smaller. You've got a variety of, you've got up to 12 core Xeon CPUs and where do I even start here? Thunderbolt 2. The thing that's interesting about it is all expansion looks like it'll have to be external because it's so small. Jolie, what was your first reaction? Did you think it looked like a trash can, or do you think it's beautiful?
It does. I mean, it's a lovely trash can, but
beautiful trash can.
I don't know. It's certainly not what we're expecting when we talk about computer hardware. It made me think about the Nexus Q that Google announced a couple years back at Google I.O., or last year rather, where it's this form factor that is surprising and interesting and maybe way off the beaten path, and you kind of don't know what to do with it as a result. I think integrating this into your desk might be a little bizarre for people who are not used to trash can shaped hardware. But it's not that big. It's rather small. So I don't know. I guess we'll see how creative professionals respond to it.
Yeah, I mean, handling 3 4K displays simultaneously is no small feat. Tom, do you think that this is going to appeal to anybody besides, you know, video editors and again, that professional market?
Well, that's what it's supposed to appeal to, is the video editors, the professional market. I wonder if it's going to appeal to them, actually. I think they'll like the specs. And I think in the end, that's all that matters. And they may grumble a little bit about the fact that it'll roll around under their desk if it falls over and maybe not love the fact that it looks like that. But functionally, the insides are what counts, and people are going to be really attracted to what's going on in the CPU and the 12-core Xeons and having the graphics power, the dual GPUs. That's all important stuff. I'm interested to see how Thunderbolt expansion works in practice. Theoretically, it should work just fine, but I don't think anybody's really tried it over the long haul and relied on it.
Ayaz, what do you think? We've got new MacBook Airs. You and I had speculated that maybe they'd get Retina. I was a little disappointed just because I need a new Air so badly and I'd love to have the Retina version. But were you surprised that the MacBook Pros didn't seem to get touched?
I wasn't. I guess I was thinking the MacBook Airs would be talked about. The MacBook Pros got a refresh, I think, relatively recently. So maybe that wasn't in the cards for this particular WWDC. The fact that the Airs did not get Retina displays kind of depressed me, but Apple pushing hard, saying battery life. If you're going to carry a small device, it should have longer battery life. And in their OS X presentation, they were talking a lot about CPU utilization. So as they had, I think, a video playing in a web page, if it was covered up, the CPU usage would drop, which would give you better battery life. So maybe once Mavericks comes out, I'm still holding out hope, when Mavericks comes out, maybe with these Haswell processors, we'll finally see a Retina MacBook Air, because they figured out a right way to keep all that battery life and have a thin form factor. And on the Mac Pro, like Tom was saying, with a Thunderbolt, betting on Thunderbolt seems like a gamble. The thing is, there's not a ton of accessories for Thunderbolt. And at some point, you're going to need a case the size of the old Mac Pro to put your expansion cards in, connected by Thunderbolt to the new Mac Pro. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense for the expansion side if there are accessories coming.
I read a bunch of articles today saying that investors are not impressed, that they wanted something more. And I felt like Apple put a really good keynote on yesterday. It was feisty. There was humor. It was interesting to watch. But I'm curious what you guys think about the impression it made. Did Apple do what they needed to do? I mean, it was a worldwide developers conference. I think they did what they needed to do for developers. But outside of that, do you think they had the impact that they should have had?
Hey, guys. I think that being at the keynote and not being a really huge Apple fangirl, kind of not caring about it in an emotional way, I think the way most investors would look at it, I think there were a lot of statistics that didn't have a whole lot of meaning that were thrown out. And that's just the nature of developer conference keynotes. But I don't think that Apple is showing the kind of really rapid growth and adoption outside of the creative communities when it comes to this big, expensive hardware. And I think that the competitors that they have are doing much more innovative things right now. And I think Apple just keeps doing retreads of the same old stuff. But that's just my perspective as someone who admittedly uses Android and Windows PCs.
Well, and you also have, I mean, there was so much speculation that, well, Apple's going to get into the wearable computing arena. And that's not a theoretical arena. I mean, we've seen the frenzy over Google Glass, and nothing like that was even talked about, not even hinted at yesterday. And you know, Apple's not necessarily on the same plan that the analysts and investors would like them to be on. But when you don't hear stuff like that, I think that a lot of people kind of go, oh, well, that, you know, only half the things on my checklist were even mentioned.
But one of the things that got buried in the iOS announcement at all was the fact that iOS is coming to cars next year. And they showed this slide of pretty much every car manufacturer, like Honda, Ferrari, a bunch
except
of these.
Audi.
And was Audi not there? There's just a ton of them out coming out next year with this new integration. They didn't spend a lot of time on how exactly it's going to work. We saw some UI that looked like maybe it's a specific UI for the car when you dock your iOS device. I think that could make stockholders much more happy next year. Because they just kind of mentioned this. It just was a little sleeper note. I think it might be a bigger hit for Apple than people think.
All right, there actually were other things than Apple going on, and we're going to get to them in a second. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, ShareFile by Citrix. Constantly collaborating with coworkers in business, that's the name of the game, and you got to share files, share spreadsheets, presentations, contracts, all that stuff. It's essential that these important files are kept safe, secure, and under your control. That's why we recommend ShareFile by Citrix, the easy-to-use business solution that allows you to exchange files quickly and securely. I talk about contracts. When I'm dealing with contracts or tax stuff, I want to make sure, A, that the people who say they're looking at them are actually looking at them. And I want to make sure that only they are looking at them. And that's what ShareFile does for me. I can get a confirmation that someone opened the file. I guess I can't tell if they actually read and understood it. But I know if they're lying if they said they looked at it. And I haven't got that confirmation yet. And also ShareFile end-to-end encryption, control of who can access these files, means that I know that, you know what? It's nice and secure. Only that person that needs to see this is going to see it. With ShareFile, you can also send files of almost any size. No bounce backs. Control who's accessing that file. And they sync automatically. So if you are doing a file that a lot of people need to look at, you and your team always have the most updated materials. You can access ShareFile from anywhere. Your laptop, your tablet, your smartphone. Work on the go. I want you to try ShareFile with our special offer. Sign up today. Receive a 30-day free trial, no obligation. Go to ShareFile.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and enter TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com and type in TNT. Give it a shot. We thank Citrix and ShareFile for their support of Tech News Today. All right, let's start off with in chronological order of the announcements yesterday, Microsoft's Xbox One. We got most of the deals at the end of May, most of the details at the end of May. So they really focused on gaming this time, which is appropriate. It's E3. That's where the gamers are. Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, which I find an awkwardly hilarious title. Battlefield 4 Second Assault will arrive first on Xbox One. Dead Rising 3, Rise, Son of Rome, Halo. Someday, they didn't give us a date, but it's coming. Titanfall coming in spring. If you're a racing fan, Forza 5. Killer Instinct's finally getting a sequel. There's Minecraft exclusive for Xbox. A couple of cool projects like Quantum Break and Project Spark. And a new look Xbox 360 that's done in the Xbox One style. So they were trying to say, hey, Xbox 360 isn't over yet. Don't give up on it. We got lots of great games coming for it. Twitch will be integrated into Xbox One. We'll be able to record and live stream gameplay if you have Xbox Live Gold. And we finally got the price and release date. $500, $499 for the Xbox One coming in November. You can pre-order it now. And if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber, you'll be able to get 2 free game downloads per month. They'll kick that off with Assassin's Creed 3 and Halo 3. Jolie, are you into this stuff at all? Are you a gamer? Does this interest you?
You know, I'm not much of a gamer. Yeah, so the kind of games I play are like the older stuff back when I was a kid and Nintendo was a very new thing. So what I'm excited about are the more casual, kid-friendly gaming titles like Mario Kart. Love Mario Kart. Love Donkey Kong. Stuff like that. Metal Gear Solid, first-person shooters. I don't even know what they are or what they're about. I guess I'm just not into them.
So if Microsoft is pitching this as your home entertainment console, it's got TV, it's got Netflix, it's got videos. Does this price appeal to you? $499 and you got to pay an Xbox Live subscription?
I guess it just depends. As a normal consumer, if I had kids, sure. That's not completely unreasonable. I don't know. Do you think that's a normal price point for a gaming console?
It's certainly not outside the realm for a gaming console, but I'm not sure if Microsoft's plans to snare the not serious gamer are going to bring them in the tent for the TV show stuff. Let's set that aside for a moment. Do you think that they pleased the hardcore gamers with these titles?
I think they were trying to. I don't know if they have, because one of the issues with these games at this point is there's very few exclusives, and Microsoft did show a couple of them, and of course they always have Halo, so it was smart of them to say, oh, by the way, we're going to have a really snazzy version of Halo coming out sometime, because the latest sequel just came out, so it's kind of strange that they'd be announcing it. But they want to make sure the gamers are still happy because this is E3. They did all of that TV stuff in that first announcement because they wanted to show this is an entertainment box. Now they want to show that it does games. And I think at $500, really pricey, but Microsoft's going to try to position it as the only – that's why it's the one, right? It's the one box you need. It's a Blu-ray player, has all these entertainment services, and it plays some really great games.
Sarah, is it the one box you need? Because I know you're a casual gamer as well.
I'm a casual gamer. I mean, Dance Central is the thing that I still like the most on an Xbox because it's freaking fun. And, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't pay $500 to have it in my living room all the time. But, yeah, no, this is too much for somebody who goes, well, I have a Netflix account. And, yeah, I kind of like having the idea of having a more beautiful, Grand Central for all my media. If maybe you don't have a Roku or you don't have a TV that you really like the smart TV aspects of it, then maybe this would be the sort of thing that's so robust that it's the answer for everything. But I really don't think if you're not a gamer, this is the best choice. It's like it's too much. It's this really souped up system that you won't take advantage of.
So going with $499 Xbox One, some great titles for hardcore gamers here. We got to 6 o'clock last night, and Sony had their chance to talk. Iaz, what did they have to say?
Yeah, so their PS4, they showed the actual console. That was one of the big digs when Sony announced the PS4. They showed this black angular box that some people call the Xbox One Italics. It kind of looks like a slanted version of that. It's a black matte box with some glossy highlights. Price of $399, undercutting the Xbox One by $100. Arrives in the holiday season. No date was mentioned, though. It's $100 less than the Xbox, but the Xbox One comes with the Kinect. If you wanted to get a camera, the PSI option, that'll cost you $60 extra. On used games, Sony just threw it out there and said, look, PS4 supports used games, won't impose any new restrictions on used games. They can be traded, sold, lent out to people, or you can keep it forever. This received something like 30 seconds of applause by the audience. They love this idea of keeping gaming the way it was. This is all about disc-based gaming, by the way. The console is going to be region-free, so you can buy games from anywhere and play it on your PS4. You don't need to be connected online to play. It won't require you to check in online to play games. And then there is some other stuff. So outside the actual box, PlayStation Plus expansion. The PlayStation Plus membership carries over to the PS4. One price for the 4, the 3, and the Vita. And the PlayStation Plus takes over the multiplayer. That used to be free. When you want to do online multiplayer, it used to be part of the PlayStation network. Now it will cost you $5 a month. Nobody seems to care about that. And they showed off a great demo of Bungie's Destiny, which looks like its Halo competitor because it's effectively the same thing. And some other news. There was a large emphasis on indie gaming. There's going to be an indie section on the PS Store for game developers. These games look a lot more casual than the hardcore Metal Gear kind of stuff. Jolie, Sony was showing these indie games off, and some of these are going to be exclusive. Some of them have this really fun retro-looking styles. Will that get your attention? Because if you're not a serious gamer, it seems like fun games. That's how I described it when I was watching it. They look like fun, not this, I'm in a war. It's like, no, I'm going to have fun with the game.
Yeah, but then you have to invest the extra $100 for the system and to discover some of these games that you aren't familiar with already. I think for the casual gamer, if they have one of those units in their home already, if it belongs to someone else, a roommate, a brother, a sister, whoever, they might take advantage of that. But I think if you are really just a casual gamer and you don't need to be playing first-person shooters, you're probably going to go with Nintendo and the titles you already know.
Tom, we were covering this live yesterday. We saw a bunch of games. That indie section seemed pretty interesting as well. What stood out to you? Because it seems like the audience loved the fact that you could trade games all you wanted. It seemed old school. And that price cut, or the $399, not price cut, undercutting the price of the Xbox seemed to win a lot of approval as well.
Yeah, Joshua Caleb just retweeted a story about Sony. This was from Polygon saying, well, it's up to third-party providers what DRM they want to do. Now, this has always been true, I suppose, but it does take a little bit of the wind out of the sails. Sony's saying our first-party games, the ones we're in control on, will not have any DRM on them, and you'll be able to sell them used, et cetera. And it is different than what Microsoft is doing. But I think Sony really had their back against the wall, and they said, we have to do everything the gamers want. We have to undercut on price. So that was the advantage of going second. Well, I doubt that they changed the price in reaction to Microsoft. I think those things are determined a lot farther in advance for a lot of reasons. But even so, it looked like, hey, that one's $499. Ours is $100 cheaper. We're not going to restrict used games. We're not going to require an internet connection. I think that is a big one. And the other thing is, we're not going to require you to pay for our live service to do things like Netflix, to do things like watch video. That's entirely on your own. And with Microsoft, you do. I do think that a lot of people kind of are forgetting about the multiplayer being moved into the for-pay service. On the other hand, what are you going to do? If you go to Microsoft, you're definitely going to have to pay for multiplayer gaming. So Sony could afford to maybe annoy some people in that direction because they know there's not any other choice. But yeah, this is positive for Sony. As we mentioned on the live coverage yesterday, we'll see after the holidays if they can sustain that goodwill. And we'll also see what Microsoft has to say in response.
And Sony did do a little lip service to their media offerings. I believe they had a representative or like the head of Sony Pictures out, which was unusual because that's never happened. Sony usually infighting. Sony Pictures is going to produce original programming for the PlayStation Network. Music Unlimited and Movies Unlimited services are going to be available on the PS4 on day one. Redbox and Flixster are joining the applications you can get there. And the cloud strategy, the cloud services will be provided on the PS3 and PS4, so you can access games from the cloud using Gaikai. Sarah, with the price cut, with their media offerings, with their games, what makes Sony's PS4 stand out to you?
Man, you missed the opportunity to say, Sarah, you're a cord cutter. I thought that that's what you're going to do. Darn it. No, I actually find this, not surprisingly, some of the most interesting aspects of it. Sony Pictures, well, they come out with great movies. Hey, how about some original programming for the PSN to get people like me to say, gosh, I really need to be part of the PlayStation Network because there's that show that everybody keeps talking about. I mean, that's how Netflix got all those new subscriptions when House of Cards came out. I think in general, the cloud strategy makes sense for them. I also think just looking over some of what was announced for Sony, it's kind of like you've got Microsoft on one side saying, we've got this amazing console, the Xbox One. It's beautiful. It's robust. It's kind of everything. But there are a lot of restrictions. You have to play by our rules. And Sony seems to be, at least it's the impression that I get, a lot less concerned with how you use the PS4. You know, you trade games. You don't need to sign in. You kind of like, you've got all these titles. Sort of do what you want. And then again, attractively, $400 sounds a lot less than $500. So I think it was a really good announcement for Sony.
I don't think you can underplay the significance of Sony Pictures Entertainment having one of their executives on stage at a Sony Electronics announcement. That is these two historically don't like each other that much. They seem to be at loggerheads, especially over issues like piracy. So I think that's very significant to see. I'll be interested to see what kind of original programming they have. They just said they have it. They didn't have any trailers. They didn't even have any names. At least Microsoft threw Spielberg out there. They didn't have any trailers either. So this will be something to continue to watch. There are other things besides E3 and WWDC, though. Let's talk real quickly before we get to the randomizer about Google buying Waze. That broke just this morning. Google says Waze will stay independent. They'll stay in Israel. Google has a campus in Tel Aviv, so that shouldn't be too hard. They'll probably move them over there, be my guess. Brian McClendon, Google's VP of Geo, said on the blog post, "We're excited about the prospect of enhancing Google Maps with some of the traffic update features provided by Waze and enhancing Waze with Google's search capabilities." Waze has said in the past that they're a big data company. So, Jolie, when you keep that in mind, what do you think Google's strategy is here? Are they just trying to keep it out of Facebook's hands, or do they have something bigger planned?
I think that playing keep away has never really been part of Google's game. I think that they probably would love to have some of those traffic features for Google Maps, and it was probably worth the acquisition just to get that. I don't know that they'll let Waze continue to operate as an independent entity forever and ever. I think it'll probably eventually get folded into Google Maps. And I know Waze has just a million billion users or whatever, but I don't know. Do you guys use Waze? Have you ever used it?
I used it last night. Actually, I use it all the time. And here's the thing about Waze. It sucks for finding things. Its search is atrocious. I have to know the address.
Peanut butter and jelly, isn't it?
Exactly, because Google Maps is horrible at rerouting me around traffic. So if those two meet up together, I think it's divine. What do you guys think? Ayaz, are you think that's this is just a match made in heaven?
Potentially. I'm not seeing a lot of negatives on this. The thing for Google is if they can buy any entity that has social down, they should do that. And Waze works really well. People share their traffic information. And if that's if that's an overlay on your Google Maps applications, or if that's on your Android phone or whatever phone, that's a huge, huge advantage compared to every other map maker or traffic provider. The thing is, this will be available because the public is actually giving the information over. I think that's going to give Google Maps even more of an advantage than it already has. It's laughable to see how far ahead Google is. Now they add a social element that people are volunteering information. It just seems like a real win.
Well, and I think Jolie's right. This is not going to stay independent for long, at least as a brand. It could go into Google Plus with the social element that Waze has on top of things. But in the end, what Google wants is all that data. They want to mine that data and put ads in there. And that's what Waze just opened an office in Madison Avenue in New York recently. So Google wants to sell ads. That's how they make their money. Sarah, do you think that that Waze continues independent?
I think that Google isn't going to touch the product in the near future because it's a good product. I mean, Waze is a great brand. That's why when we heard Apple might be interested in Waze, although Tim Cook denied really ever being serious at that at D conference last week, but it was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sort of sense because Apple doesn't really do social that well. Then it became a Facebook story, and it's like, ooh, Facebook, you know, they just need some, you know, mapping data just to play ball. But Google makes the most sense. Google has the best maps application. It's not very social, so you add Waze on top of it, and all of a sudden, you have the most, I mean, hard-to-touch map offering out there. And if Google wanted to, like, restrict it to Android devices or, you know, keep it within Google Plus, well, I certainly hope that's not the case, but it would be something that's extremely powerful. And Apple hasn't even caught up to Google's mapping efforts as it is. So with Waze on top of it, however they end up incorporating it, and yes, it'll end up being one product, it's going to be great. People love Waze.
All right, let's fire up the randomizer. DIY Micro Robotics is making hand over fist on Kickstarter right now. I think they had like an $1,800 goal, and they've made over $90,000 for the Brick Pie robots and pie, Raspberry Pi together, thanks to Arduino. And they're going to try to sell this thing for $35, the same price as a Raspberry Pi. But Lego Mindstorms combined with a Raspberry Pi, this is a DIYer's dream.
Yeah, the Raspberry Pi is such a cheap computing device that there are always uses for it. When you combine that with something as simple, or at least in the minds of people, Lego, the Lego's a really friendly brand. When you have Mindstorms and you can basically create robots that could be powered by this Raspberry Pi, you can do some crazy things. I'm just surprised how low cost this thing might be if it does come out. And like you said, Tom, they were over $90,000 of their $1,800 goal. They have some really good stretch goals, though. They want to have 4 ports available, or they want to have one that would be solar powered. So if they reach $125,000, they'll develop a custom project to put the Brick Pi into a solar powered boat and attempt to sail it around the world. So this is one heck of a project.
This is kind of the all-star game of DIY open source hardware, essentially. You've got Lego Mindstorms, which has decades of tradition here with the upstart. Talk about your peanut butter and jelly, Jolie. This is,
you know, it's funny. Sony actually just last week came out with a line of programmable Lego robots as well. And I think, like, it's such a beautiful moment right now for the maker movement. Hardware hacking has just become so cool. And things like Kickstarter and crowdfunding are really giving the maker movement the financial boost that it needs to go from just tinkering in your garage to building a small business, or even just inspiring other people with your vision. And I think this is like the absolute perfect project for a Kickstarter.
Could not agree more. This is good stuff. Beautiful moment. Well put. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Well, thankfully, there are not too many more announcements this week, but Glimpse, the Social Discovery Conference, is happening in San Francisco tomorrow, June 12th.
All right. And on to what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Ellen. I was thinking about your discussion of what will become of game consoles. I think the idea of a dongle is a good possibility. What would make sense is if the dongle was compartmentalized in the TV, kind of like inserting a SIM card or micro SD card into your phone in a way that is hidden from the exterior appearance in order to avoid the ugly protrusion that the current USB sticks create. In this way, the TV manufacturers wouldn't have to make the device built into a piece of hardware for a 10-year life cycle. They could use the opportunity to charge consumers extra for the device, and they could provide devices with different capabilities to cater to different markets. You can have your game dongle, your DVR dongle, your internet TV dongle, or your all-in-one dongle at appropriate price points, of course. Well, that's a really good point. I think Samsung has this little expansion port on their devices. We've seen such things with cable card. You saw how that took off. So good luck, Alan, with that idea.
Yeah, I think that's pretty intriguing. I don't know if they go service or hardware, but if they stay with hardware, looking 10 years down the road, that definitely could be a way to do it. We just plug a little card in. I don't know.
I got another email from Andrew who says, here in AU, Australia, I'm assuming, we have already had issues with some government and public organizations banning the use of any kind of cloud service that is hosted overseas. The level of NSA spying makes this situation worse for anybody wanting to use services in the U.S. if they haven't already been disallowed from doing so.
You know, we got a lot of response from people overseas saying, you know, the implications for us are worse because even if you stop domestic surveillance, your current laws make it easy to spy on anybody overseas. Jolie, I know we were talking before the show. You said that you guys have been doing a lot of work on this over at VentureBeat.
Oh, we have. The day that for the news about Prism broke, we immediately got on the phone with every single company that was named in that initial list. And what we have determined is that it is real. It does exist. There is a gag order. They're not allowed to talk about it. And this is why every announcement afterwards said, not only do we not participate in it, we don't even know what it is. We've never heard of Prism before. So this is like typical military security government speak. The thing we have to remember is that even if you outlaw it, the government's still going to do it. And it's foolish for us to think that, you know, there are government, they do this kind of stuff. Just throw up your hands and put on your tinfoil hat and get off the internet or resign yourself because there's just no way to change the habits of a government like ours. I'm sorry, that sounds really conspiracy theorist, but it's the world of security.
Well, and I think the idea of paying attention to what we've allowed them to make legal is important because a lot of what people are outraged about is perfectly legal. We let the government go and pass laws that allow them to do this. So even if they're going to do it anyway, at least make it less easy. Make it less easy. But I think your point is well taken. If you want to be careful about your privacy, you probably in the end are going to have to take it into your own hands, unfortunately.
Well, then there's digital black ops. Even if you make this stuff specifically illegal, there are always going to be edge cases and specific instances where the government will, like the government does, like law enforcement sometimes has to, they'll override what's legal to do what they think is right in a given situation. Emphasis on what they think, which could be right, could be gray, could be, you know, what black ops sometimes is, which is really detrimental to people's privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, keep an eye on things over there at VentureBeat, folks. It sounds like they're doing some good work over there if you want to keep up on this issue. And Jolie, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a delight.
Absolutely. Let folks know you've got a new book out.
I do. It's called Blogging for Photographers. So if you're a blogger or a photographer and you just need to get your images on the web and learn all the tricks, like I know all the tricks of getting people to read your stuff online and look at your pretty pictures. So that's the book. It's out there.
Where do you go to get it?
You can get it on Amazon, Target. I believe Urban Outfitters carries it. So that's that makes me a hipster.
Congratulations. You've made it.
Thank you.
JolieOdell.com, JolieOdell.com, if you want to follow Jolie at her website and find out all the things that she's up to. Thanks again, Jolie.
Thank you.
It's great having you on. Of course, you can also affect our lineup every day at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, place to go to submit stories for our consideration and make your opinion heard on the other stories being submitted by voting. Go and do that. Join it. There's thousands of people in there helping us pick the stories every day, technewstoday.reddit.com. Don't forget, tomorrow afternoon, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, Sarah Iaz, Jason, and I are going to do a Google Hangout. It'll be carried on live.twit.tv, of course. And we're just going to chat with the chat room and brainstorm about the show and try to, you know, come up with ways to make Tech News Today even better. So if you'd like to participate, please come along to live.twit.tv tomorrow, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, TNT at twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Lamar Wilson joins us tomorrow. That'll be fun. We'll see you then.